In addition to the annotation, there are two modifications to this tape. First, the microphone did not do a good job of picking up the audio, of which there is a great deal during this session. For that reason, I have artificially amplified or boosted the audio throughout this tape. The second modification is that in two instances, this patient mentions her mother's name. In two places, she mentions that she is leaving Los Angeles and moving to another city. In talking about that, she mentions where she's going to be driving, and she mentions the name of the city. Those destinations and route have been removed. And in two other instances, mentions her boyfriend's name. Where she mentions her mother's name, I have substituted the words mother's name. And where she mentions her boyfriend's name, I have deleted that from the tape. Because this session is mainly verbal rather than body work, I'll take advantage of the small amount of body work that is done on this tape to make more extensive comments than I normally would. I'll start right off with this second ah sound that the patient makes. During the course of this tape, you're going to hear a number of modifications that she makes to the ah sound. At one point, as I note in the tape, she changes from ah, A-H, to ha, H-A. In other places, she excessively drags out the ah sound. And in some places, her throat sound, post-ah throat sound, is much greater than in other places. Also, occasionally, you will hear in her voice the pain that she is experiencing at the moment. All of these are valuable indicators when one is doing this therapy and listening to themselves, or, if you're a helper, listening to someone else. In order to make clear what follows, I'm actually going to repeat the same ah sound on the tape three different times, each time pointing out a different aspect of the ah sound. First, this is an articulated sound. That is to say, it has an extreme definite starting point. It is not as articulated as some other ah sounds which she'll make later during this session. But still, this is an articulated sound.
Ah.
Here it is again, listening just for the issue of articulation.
Ah.
And a third time to listen for articulation.
Ah.
Next, I want to call to your attention that the ah sound here is extensively long. It's not as long as it is with some patients, but it is almost universal that people drag out their ah sound.
Ah.
There is also an exhale throat breath sound being made by this patient, which in turn tends to drag out the ah sound. This audio program, computer program, however, allows me to differentiate between the two, and so I can give you an actual timing of this ah sound. And then I will compare it with my own ah sound so that we see how long an ah sound should take. Here's the sound again, and then I'll give you the timing.
Ah.
Excluding the post-sound breath sound, the timing was 0.87 seconds. I timed a few of my own ah sounds. They were, on an average, 0.15 seconds. So her sound is roughly six times as long as it should be. I appreciate that that is far from a fair comparison, to compare the many years of training that I had compared to the approximately 3 years that this person has been a patient of mine. Nor do I want that to be a goal you set for yourself, that you must make your sounds only about 0.15 seconds long. It is simply to give you some idea of the way in which people do drag out the ah sound, because they make a production of the mere fact of the sound that it becomes an issue in and of itself and therefore is dragged out. Now a final issue with this particular ah sound, and that is the post-sound breath sound. In order to let you hear that, which I think you probably can anyway, I'm going to amplify it 2 times.
Ah.
It was easy there to hear the ha sound following the ah sound. Still, I'll play it again for you.
Ah.
Now let's return to the session and hear some things that follow subsequently.
Ah. Ah.
What you just heard were 2 stifled yawns. Later in the session, you'll hear her yawning as the book indicates one should yawn.
Ah. Ah.
Notice that after my slight correction of her pronunciation, the next sound is particularly articulated with an extremely striking start to the ah sound.
Ah.
I'll play that sound again 3 times so you can hear the extreme articulation.
Ah. Ah. Ah.
Now returning to the session. You just heard an excellent yawn sound. It is not dragged out as much as I would like, but other than that, it was good and strong. As the book points out, any exercise stops for a yawn, and yawn should always be made with as loud a sound as possible.
Ah. 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 Ah.
What you're going to hear next is a series of 6 ah sounds followed by a yawn. The question I pose to you is, what is the difference between the first 2 ah sounds and the next 4 ah sounds that leads ultimately to a very inadequate yawn given the standards that this patient has attained for this session?
Ah. 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 Ah.
Boy, if you got the right answer to that question, mark yourself down as one superstar. You might have noticed that the second four ah sounds were shorter than the first two ah sounds. And you might have noticed that there were less overtones in the four ah sounds than the two ah sounds. Those are nice observations, but they don't explain anything. What actually is happening is that the patient has stopped focusing on her body and is now off thinking about other things while she continues the session, so that there's no longer the oomph or the emphasis on the sound or the commitment to what is going on in the session, for her preoccupation now is what she's thinking about. And thus, when she gets to the yawn, it's not very adequate. Let's return now to the session, with the patient still thinking about something else, still far away from being in the room and in her body.
Full breath, and very shallow.
With the patient now preoccupied with her thoughts, her breathing becomes shallow, and she no longer uses the belly in the breathing. After a few reminders on my part to use the belly and to make the breathing full, you'll hear what happens.
You're very shallow again. You're almost not using your belly. Fill the belly full. Blow it up.
That was it. There you heard the beginning of what amounts to emotional pain. It will become more significant later in the session.
Blow it up. Come on.
The sound is now full again. She's been brought back to the room. But also now, the pain in her voice is quite evident. We can also understand now the reason for the shallow breathing. It was designed to ward off the impending pain, which, at some level at least, she knew was coming, and therefore, in effect, fled the session and the breathing rather than experience or allow the pain. See if you can fill your belly more.
Ah.
Full breath into the belly, come on. So light.
What's going on now? Her sound has all but disappeared. You may have heard in some of the earlier sounds the beginnings of a sense of anger in the sound. It was very slight, but it was present. What we're finding now, and the reason why the sound has almost disappeared, is in essence rebelliousness. I'm telling her to breathe deeply, I'm telling her to use the belly, and she is saying, no, I won't. I'm not going to participate in this. But rebellion is not yet part of her character structure. That is to say, it is there, but it is deeply buried beneath other layers. So when faced with the choice between rebellion and obedience, she chooses obedience. Chooses, not quite. Submits is a better word. There is the indicator. That yawn with the proper yawn sound. She's back in the session. She's for the present, no longer thinking about something else. She's in the room and in the session.
Protecting yourself from?
With this question on my part, what are you protecting yourself from? We begin what amounts to a long verbal part of the session.
I don't know. The unknown? Another success or failure?
And you're right, it probably is both. Given that mother, you couldn't win either way.
The last few days, I just feel so helpless and futile that nothing I ever do, nothing will ever come up of anything I do.
She's just told us, hasn't she, what that pain that we heard was all about. Everything she does is futile. She can't succeed, she can't fail, she can't do anything right, and now she's failing at the therapy session because she's not breathing properly. Thus the pain.
Nothing worthwhile, at least. I'll never be satisfied with anything I do.
You will never be satisfied with anything you do?
Well, I think my standards have still gone unchallenged.
So. Yes, they have.
So.
Yes, they have.
I'll take advantage of this rather golden opportunity to exemplify and reiterate a point I made repeatedly during the book. She's feeling futile, but emotions or feelings are a function of cognition, a function of thought. In order to feel futile, she has to have a standard which she can't meet. The question then becomes not the issue of the emotion of futility, but the issue of the standards, and the fact that she has not yet reevaluated her standards of what constitutes success or failure. If she establishes, as many people do, standards which by their nature are unattainable, then inherently so, she must fail at everything she does to the point of futility.
I just feel like I have to choose really soon between something that I'd enjoy doing or something where I could make a lot of money. Either way, there just seems to be a lot of pain and wasted time involved. If I decide to do something where I'll earn a lot of money, I won't enjoy myself until I retire. And if I decide to do something that I'll enjoy doing, it seems like I'll enjoy doing it, but there'll be a great deal of struggle. And I'll have to spend a lot of time struggling. I don't really like either option too much at this point.
Your values clarification problem.
Yeah.
Haven't you said to me that you do such good work at work, at your job, that it's boring? You get done so rapidly, they don't give you enough work.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you say you're failing at that?
I don't think I'm feeling it, but I think I'm feeling it. Attempting to have an acting career, if that's what it is that I'm doing, which it's supposed to be. supposedly is what I'm doing while working that awful job. Because otherwise, I should be doing something else. But I still haven't sent out letters or even gotten the information to send out letters to people.
Named city. I wonder if you're kind of approaching life as a fairy tale and waiting for the fairy godmother to come.
My Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, right. If you actually do the work, sending out the letters, getting all the names, contacting all the agents, and then you get the work, it doesn't count because you had to work to do it. Mm-hmm. You want it to come to you magically, like a fairy tale. You want to be discovered at Schwab's drugstore.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess in all my daydreams, pretty much, yeah. Not at Schwab's, that's what I say.
I know, it's not even there anymore.
Actually, it is. It's been rebuilt on a Vine and Sunset.
Really? Right at the same corner?
Mm-hmm.
They rebuilt it.
Have you not seen that? It's an incredible complex. A friend of mine lives there.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. What was your favorite fairy tale as a kid?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is Cinderella. When you said that, too.
Mother's name.
It always referred to me as Snow White, but it was never really thrilled by that.
Who referred to you?
Mother's name.
Really? Mumsky. Mumsky.
Yep. Yeah.
And why did you do that? What was the rationale behind that?
Oh, I don't know. Because my hair was dark and my skin was light. Maybe she wanted me dead. I don't know. But she always referred to me as her Snow White. Unless she was telling me to clean stuff up, in which case I was Cinderella, my brother was Cinderfella. I don't think of them as fairy tales, for I don't know why, but Peter Pan was a big favorite of mine when I was little. But I never thought of it as a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I like people that got into mischief. Alice in Wonderland, Wendy and Peter Pan, who was not so much mischievous as Peter Pan was. Tinkerbell was mischievous. And Eloise. Those are my favorites. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to wait out life, huh?
Well, it's been
until
the tactic.
Somebody comes along and kisses you and wakes you up.
I guess. I don't want to. It's... I just feel like I don't know. Like, I don't know how to go about. I don't know how to do the interim things. I can sit on my butt, or I can do good work at several different kinds of things, but I don't know how to go about getting the work.
The actress work?
any work in particular. If I wanted to, I had an idea for a business I would like to start, I had no idea how to go about getting it started. Not step one or anything. Mm-hmm. I had not a clue. Mm-hmm.
That's the Alice in Wonderland part of life, isn't it?
Not through the rabbit hole.
Nothing is what it appears to be, and everything is the big unknown.
Mm.
So when it comes to the world, you're going to approach life as much as Alice would. It's just this big jumble of things going on, and none of it makes sense, and none of it's constant. A little unknown change. When it comes to yourself, you're Snow White. You're going to sleep your way through life until something wakes you up. Some external force wakes you up.
What a crappy sleep.
Very non-productive.
Mm-hmm.
How too many people spend their life waiting? They wait to graduate from grammar school, and wait to graduate from middle school, and wait to graduate from high school, and wait to graduate from college, and wait to get married, and then wait for the kids to be there, and then wait for the kids to be grown up and gone, and then wait for retirement, and then wait for death. They spend their whole life waiting. It'll always be different when.
Yeah, well, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. And I used to be very productive. There were things I used to do. I just don't do them anymore.
For what reason? In fact, you know the reason, I think.
Why? Because nothing, I never thought anything would ever come of it.
I don't think that's the reason.
What's the reason?
I think the reason is because you don't think you have the right to. You have to examine how many double binds that woman put you into. Success belonged to her, failure belonged to you. Choice belonged to her, obedience belonged to you.
Had a conversation with her earlier in the week, and she asked me to talk to my brother while we drove.
Drive direction and destination removed.
About him picking a career, something that he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents have, since I was very little, have always asked me to speak to my brother. And I told her that was, it's ridiculous that if anyone's going to be taking notes from anyone, I'm going to be taking notes from him because he's doing what he enjoys and he doesn't listen to other people.
He has a career, doesn't he?
Well, I guess. I don't know if I'd call it a career, but he has a job. He always has jobs.
Yeah, well.
But he enjoys what he does.
Exactly. Like,
and I don't think there's any problem with that. And
but there is in her world.
Of course there is. Of course. And
why? Why, ridiculous. Why? Why is that a problem?
Why is what? Why is him doing what he wants a problem for her?
Why does she think that doing what you enjoy doing mm-hmm. is not the way you should live your life?
Because she wasn't allowed to do it?
Well, that's part of it, sure, but
because it's not what she. It would be, I think it would be slightly different if it were something that she picked for him.
I want something more fundamental than that.
Okay, restate the question. Why is it a problem for her?
That he is doing something that he enjoys doing. Why does she think he needs to be redirected, talked out of that?
Because she needs
try to step back from your closeness to her, mm-hmm. your experience of her. Look at her from a distance
mm-hmm.
and ask yourself, what is this person's sense of life? What is her statement about the nature of existence, nature of life?
Because you need to suffer?
Exactly.
Hmm.
What does she feed off of?
Yeah, she did it again this week. I never hear her more laugh harder or be more happy when she hears about the misfortunes of me or other people.
Exactly. Precisely.
Yeah.
She's what Rand called a pain trader. That's her currency.
Mm-hmm.
She builds a bank account of other people's pain and of her own pain, and she spends it. She exchanges it. The way you do with money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's intolerable or unacceptable in her world that her son is doing something he enjoys rather than something that he must do whether he likes it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now think back to the option you presented me. I either have to do something I enjoy and suffer, or I have to do something I won't enjoy but I'll get paid for.
Right.
Both issues of pain.
Or I could marry a really wealthy man and do what I want.
Absolutely. And be miserable that way.
Exactly. Any advice?
Pain is a metaphysical accident. How often have I said that to you?
Several times.
Yes. We talked about it last week. Only letting the pain go so deep, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been having a lot of dreams recently.
This change of subject is technically called an association. The topic that she and I are discussing has called to mind the dreams that she's been having, which indicates that the nature of the dream is directly related to the topic under discussion.
I had a dream last night that I had a baby, girl, who, and I didn't really know what to do about it because I didn't have anyone else, and so I was just leaving the baby at home while I went to work, and then figured that was probably a bad idea. And then there were these two other children. One was 7, one was 5, and I think a boy and a girl. And I realized that they were mine as well, and so I asked them to look after the baby during the day, and then we became homeless. That was it. And I don't remember anything else. I woke up shortly after that.
What did you make of that dream?
I don't know. In some ways, I felt it was that the other two children were my brother and me when we were younger. I don't know. I'm never good at interpreting dreams. What do you make of it?
Yeah, like many dreams, it's a statement of your relationship to life, your character structure.
Okay.
What does it start off with? It starts off with presenting you with two intolerable choices. Either I go to work and abandon my baby,
mm-hmm.
or I stay with my baby and I don't have work.
Mm-hmm.
The both choices being bad ones, but they're right. The only two that options you see.
Right.
Which is exactly what you and I were just talking about.
Right.
And you look to see if there's not some way out of this. You realize not only is there no way out of it, but it's even worse than I realized because now I have three children.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it ends with tragedy. We're homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, what you and I were just talking about, your sense of having no place in the world. All options are bad options. No way to succeed. No chance of success. No chance of happiness. You don't really belong in this world.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really a good dream.
All dreams are good dreams.
All dreams are?
Yeah.
Even nightmares?
Even nightmares. The second part of that dream
mm-hmm.
is what you emphasized, that it was a girl baby. And you're in charge of saving yourself, of nurturing yourself, of mothering yourself,
mm-hmm.
which you can't do in the dream, in your
right.
statement of life. And thus, earlier, your feeling of futility and hopelessness, which is what your dream speaks of. It's futile. There's no way out of this. It's just going to get worse.
Last week you had said something about you said that he turns everything in on himself.
Yeah.
Which I was very surprised I hadn't really seen as that before, but this week I definitely noticed that on everything.
Uh-huh.
I also felt very protective of him this week.
Mm-hmm.
Since this is a training tape, it's worth mentioning at this point that what we're seeing right now is the operation of defenses, cognitive defenses. She's changed the subject from herself to her boyfriend that she lives with. Why? She's actually talking about how she was protecting him this week because she saw his vulnerability that I had pointed out to her the previous week. Actually, in fact, this is an operation of the defense mechanism of projective identification. She's actually saying that this week she has tried to protect herself by protecting him.
That's why you're attracted to him, initially.
Why?
Because his statement of life is the same as yours. It's hopeless.
I didn't feel that way when I wasn't here, when I was in Israel. I didn't feel that way.
Perhaps then the answer is for you to emigrate to Israel.
I don't think it's just Israel. I think it's, I don't know. I think I have issues with this city. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what it's like when I'm out.
Named state.
Maybe it's just living. Maybe it's a being on my own thing rather than, you know, living with someone or living with whomever.
She's now returned to the session on her own, but there is a difference in her breathing. I'll play it 3 times, see if you can spot the difference. Some differences may be fairly evident. There's still the ah sound rather than ha, it is ah. The sound is not quite as articulated as it used to be, and we can find that both the anger and the pain are missing. But the change is on the post-ah exhale sound, which is now much longer and much stronger than it was. Listen one more time to the sound.
Ah.
Why is that important? Why do I mention it to you? The exhale breath sound is undertaken as a way of controlling the exhale. That her exhale breath sound is now greater than it used to be is indicative of the fact that she is now controlling more than she was before. In order to deal with the pain, in order to deal with the anger, in order to deal with the topics that we've just addressed, she is exercising control.
Ah.
Ah. Ah. Ah. Ah.
The attempt at control isn't working, is it? After a few more breaths, giving this more time to develop, I'll provide an interpretation to her. Self-pity is not going to solve the problem, only anger is. For the therapists among my readers, that was not a character analytic interpretation. It was a variant of an empathetic interpretation. It was also an interpretation in the present, but not an interpretation in the transference.
Ah.
Thumbs up and inhale, down hard shot, the exhale.
The reason why I'm having her do the arms up on the inhale, down hard and shout on the exhale is because she seems to have shaken off my interpretation about anger. So I'm using an exercise which is fairly simple but might elicit some of the anger. You might pay attention to the nature and form of her shouts during this exercise. Some of them are clear and you can hear the ringing of the metal in the room, which is an overhead fan. Others of them become stifled when the integrity of the shout is lost. Then I stop the exercise.
There's a greater sin than pain treating. It's treating life as a struggle and then being tired by the struggle, worn out.
That's worse?
Mm-hmm.
I'm already tired.
That's why I'm saying that to you. You're tired because you have treated. I think that's perhaps too active a word to say you've treated. But I don't know any way to make it passive, so. Okay. You've treated life as a struggle. And it's worn you out at the age of, what, 25, is it? 24? 25.
So it's not a struggle?
It's a struggle if you treat it as such, certainly.
Okay. Well, what other options are there?
What other options are there?
Yeah, well, if it's not a struggle, if it doesn't have to be a struggle, what else can it be?
A process. A creation. Life is making, life is causing, life is creating. We talked about that a long time ago and posed the question to you, what's the purpose of life? Recall that? Long, long, long time ago?
Yeah, the purpose of life is living. Isn't that what
you said? Job, no, I said the job of life is living.
Oh.
Yeah. But that old metaphysical question, what's the purpose of life? Why are we here?
Uh-huh.
Remember that discussion a long time ago? No.
Yeah, well... Wasn't it open-ended that there was no answer to it?
Of course. Exactly. The purpose of life is whatever purpose you choose for your life. That's its purpose.
Okay.
So if you choose struggle... Or if you choose pain, or if you choose failure and self-pity and the rest of those non-productive, non-creative things, then yeah, that's what you'll get out of life because that's what you've chosen as the purpose of life. We never talked about the difference between process and state, did we? I don't recall that we ever did. Yeah. It's a very common error people make. They don't distinguish between process and state. So they'll treat a condition as permanent, as this is the state I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of looking at it as process, this is what I'm passing through as opposed to what I'm in.
Right.
And life is process, it's not state. Yes, if you lose a leg or something, yeah, right, that's state. I'm legless or whatever it is. But life itself is process. That very fact says these decisions, albeit that they're characterologic decisions, so they're built into your soul, still these decisions are open to re-examination, re-evaluation, and change.
Okay. Would it be appropriate to say that if a process is to align, that state is a point on that line?
Yes. Yeah. It's an old error that economists used to make all the time. They'd look at the economy at a moment and treat it as a permanent condition instead of recognizing it that it's a slice in time.
Right. Well, that's dumb. Doesn't the economy move in waves?
Not if you're a statist economist, it doesn't.
Well,
It goes way back to Feldman with Frank Knight, University of Chicago School of Economics, who pointed out that when they had all this uproar about antitrust and everything, how horrible the monopolies are and the rest of it, and that was his specialty, was monopoly theory. And he pointed out, if you'd have looked at the cigarette industry in 1940, at the beginning of 41, beginning of World War II, Lucky Strikes had something like 90% of the total cigarette market.
Wow.
Now, you have trouble finding a Lucky Strike.
Yeah.
But to them, at that time, that's a classic monopoly. Look, they have 90%, they own the market, we got to break them up. And Frank Knight is pointing out, time will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave them alone. It'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the soldiers went over in World War II, always given cigarettes, Lucky Strike cigarettes, as part of their rations.
I've been reading something about that recently, about how World War II soldiers brought back millions and millions of dollars, sent back millions and millions of dollars, either from looting or from just selling what care packages and rations they were given.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Economics I read. History I did.
They're linked, aren't they?
Yeah, perhaps. So, the major thing I want to leave you with this week is get angry at yourself.
Okay.
When you find yourself in this masochistic morass of self-pity and struggle and pain and futility and all the rest of this, just get pissed off at yourself and just say, God damn it, I'm not going to live that way. That's enough of that shit, and this is not going to continue.
Okay. Okay.